This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After a war to depose the Taliban and root out al-Qaeda bases, the United States pledged to help Afghanistan recover from a quarter century of conflict and build a peaceful, prosperous, and democratic state. Thus far, the record is mixed. There has been some progress in reconstruction, especially in the capital city, Kabul, though much more remains to be done. And as the first country's first presidential election approaches, the UN reports that an astonishing 90% of the eligible population has registered to vote. But most warlords, including American allies, have yet to be disarmed. The National Army is small, at least so far, and outgunned. The opium poppy, almost eradicated under the Taliban, now nourishes a booming trade in illegal drugs, and the profits flow to criminals, to some of the warlords, and, many say, to the Taliban. U.S.-led forces continue operations, mostly along the border with Pakistan, but violence and terrorism persist. And there are ongoing setbacks, like a helicopter crash today, in which one U.S. Marine was killed and 14 others were injured. Later in the program, Alan Schwartz will join us to discuss baseball's designated hitter. But first, to Afghanistan. This October's election is critical to the country and to U.S. policy. Last week, we spoke with Afghanistan's ambassador to the United States. Today, the U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan joins us. If you have questions about the election, security, U.S. policy toward the warlords and on drugs, give us a call. We'd especially like to hear from those of you who've been there recently. Our number in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad now joins us from his office in Kabul, Afghanistan. Ambassador, thank you very much for joining us. I know it's late there.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. Good evening from Kabul.
At his news conference when he was there in Kabul yesterday, U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld acknowledged that he said the biggest obstacle to democracy in Afghanistan is the flourishing opium trade. Thus far, the Pentagon and U.S. generals have said they cannot spare U.S. troops from the hunt for Taliban and al-Qaeda to help eradicate the poppy. Is that going to change?
Well, this is something that we would have to think about and decide on. It is, however, very important to recognize that the growing narcotics problem is threatening what we are trying to achieve here. And the monies that are coming in can be used to corrupt the government, affect elections, and to finance extremists and terrorist groups. So far, the British have had the lead here in working with the Afghan government. We are examining ways in which we can be helpful in order to reverse this this trend, and we're debating and discussing the issue internally, but no decisions at this point on this issue.
You mentioned British troops. NATO has made a commitment to help in Afghanistan. There's a force of NATO troops there in Kabul. But President Karzai, as you well know, has been asking for more troops and that their mission be expanded outside of Kabul. Any progress on that?
Yes, NATO has started to deliver on its commitments to Afghanistan. Three provincial reconstruction teams now have been taken over or started by NATO. Of course, NATO took over the command of the international security forces in Kabul, and they've also taken responsibility for north and northeast Afghanistan. They will send two additional battalions of forces to Afghanistan before the presidential election. Of course, we and the Afghans would like to see NATO do as much as possible to help Afghanistan have as good an election as possible and to deal with the security problem that the country faces, as the Taliban, as you know, have declared war on registration and elections. And we anticipate that they will try to cause disruptions in Afghanistan as we move close to the presidential election.
And let me then ask you about that prospect. People are expecting a stepped-up campaign of intimidation, of violence. What's being done in preparation to counter what could be a very difficult period?
Well, What we are doing here together with the Afghans is that we're putting a plan together to limit possible disruptions by the Taliban and others. There is a joint group from ISAF, NATO, that is the United States and the Afghans. The Afghans will have primary responsibility for the areas around polling stations. The Afghans also, together with NATO, ISAF, play a role in terms of a broader security, sort of a broader ring area protection, and ultimately the wider ring. Our forces will also play a role. Right now, as we conduct operations in Afghanistan, they are very much focused in terms of shaping the environment for a good and as much as possible secure elections. But we are anticipating increased activities on the part of the Taliban and others to disrupt this election. They have tried to do this every time we have had a major development here, positive development, like the Constitutional Loi Jirga. Prior to that, they intensified their effort, and we are anticipating the same thing this time.
And as you're talking about that, obviously the stakes for the Afghanistan government, for the people of Afghanistan, and for the United States are very, very, very high in this election. In a way, they're very high for the Taliban, too.
Exactly. I think they see themselves being marginalized for the next 5 years, because this presidential election will determine the leadership of the country for the next 5 years. They are also seeing how positive the response of the Afghan people have been. As you said in your introduction, more than 90% of eligible Afghans have registered in the face of unbelievable threats, including the death of some of the people who have gone to register or have tried to facilitate registration. But nevertheless, rather than being intimidated, which has been the purpose or the intent of the Taliban, they have reacted unbelievably with a larger number of people registering. I have been personally very surprised. I had anticipated that perhaps at best we could get between 6 to 7 million. So this has been a major development, indicating that the people of Afghanistan want an opportunity to choose their own leader, to have a democratic form of government, and to make progress with regard to that hope, that desire of the people of Afghanistan.
We want your questions to Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad, who's with us on the line from Kabul, Afghanistan. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Let's speak with John, who's with us on the line from Winchester, Virginia.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a soldier. I just recently came back in country from Afghanistan.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air with Ambassador Khalilzad.
Yes, how are you, Ambassador?
I'm fine. Thank you for your service. People like you have made a huge difference, not only for our country, but also to help the people of Afghanistan have this great, unusual opportunity to go towards presidential elections in the next 2 months. So thank you for what you've done here.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm proud to have served, and I'm proud to be a part of the reconstruction effort there. We work for...
Did you serve in a PRT?
John, are you still with us?
Yes, sir, I sure am.
He was asking if you were in a PRT.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, we work with a PRT.
Oh. Great. Where were you?
Ghazni.
Ghazni. Well, I may have seen you then, because I came to open that PRT, and I just was back there a few weeks ago.
Yes, sir.
Did you have a question for the ambassador, John?
No, just to continue to offer support. We're working really hard, and I want to make sure that the word gets out that we're making real progress there, and that good things are happening in Afghanistan.
Well, do us a favor, John. Tell us a little bit. What, first of all, what is a PRT, and what was your job there?
I work with the communication section. This is the PRT is responsible primarily for the reconstruction effort, the reconstruction team in the area. With my communication section, I perform combo support for the lead units, specifically for those people providing security for the PRT teams. And these are the people that are out supporting the coalition forces in the minefield clearing. We had some rock engineers working earlier in Bath that had just finished an athletic area, and we just provide support for these people doing the real hard work, the real elbow grease there.
Ghazni, if my recollection of geography correct, is in the eastern part of the country.
That's correct. It's been a province that's south of Kabul. It's one of the lower lying areas. But things there are starting to really come together.
Well, John, again, thank you very much, and we appreciate your phone call.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Ambassador Khalilzad, here's an email question from Kevin in Tilene, Kentucky. Could you please ask about Captain Idema and other Americans who have been arrested for having a prison operation in Kabul? Are they U.S. contractors? Did the United States or Afghans use them to do torture and interrogation for them? What's the true story? These are people who are apparently retired U.S. military who set themselves up in Kabul. Is that correct?
That is correct. That case is in an Afghan court. But what I can say on it at this point is three Americans were here. Jack Adema was the leader of the group. They have been arrested, and they are charged with running a private jail, arresting Afghans and interrogating them. And we have checked with all our government agencies, and there is no relationship between them and the United States government. As I said, they are in detention by the Afghan authorities. We are providing them with consular services, and they will have their day in court.
As I understand it, they did at one point at least provide information extracted from some of their prisoners in that private prison and provided that information to the U.S. military.
There was one case that the U.S. military has confirmed that one person that was imprisoned by them was turned over to the military, but they did not work for the Department of Defense, although they have claimed in their statement that they were in contact with some people in the Pentagon. But the Pentagon has said they did not work for the Department of Defense, and they do not work for any other part of the government for their mission or whatever they were doing in Afghanistan.
And as long as we're in this area of the conversation, can you bring us up to date on the investigations that are underway into interrogations of Afghans at U.S. facilities in Afghanistan? Again, as you know, widespread allegations of torture there.
Yes, there have been allegations in a few instances. And because of that, our military has ordered a top-to-bottom review of the practices in these prisons, and we are awaiting the release of that report. The report has been completed and is undergoing final reviews.
And when do you expect it to be released?
The sooner the better. I expect it to happen in the immediate future.
We're speaking today with Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad, the U.S. envoy in Kabul, Afghanistan. We'll continue with more of your calls and your email questions when we come back from a short break. Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Our guest is the United States Ambassador to Afghanistan, Zalmay Khalilzad. He's speaking with us from his office in Kabul. Again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us, TOTN@NPR.org. And let's take a question now. Rakesh is with us on the line from Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, hi, Neil. I have a question for the ambassador. It appears to be that the U.S. is pretty clear about the steps it has to take to address problems like the drug mafia or the warlords in Afghanistan. But what are the kind of roadblocks you're running into when it comes to the political will of the local administration to work with the U.S. administration to resolve these problems? Now, are they really as committed to resolving these problems, or is this kind of a tacit collusion between the local administration and the warlord, the drug mafia?
Ambassador Khalilzad?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Well, with regard to the Afghan government, on the declaratory level, the government has spoken very positively with regard to the need to counter the drug threat that is threatening to undermine the Afghan effort at reconstruction and to build a modern, legally based society. But there are elements in the government because of the lucrativeness of the drug trade who are cooperating with the drug traffickers. There is also the issue that the government ability to enforce its own law is limited at this time, although growing. And there is also the issue that some of the people who are involved with regard to producing narcotics or some of the local officials who have a significant amount of land. Without help, the government is increasing its capacity. It's primarily its responsibility to deal with this problem. It needs to be able to have jails and prosecutions and prosecutors and police forces to go after these traffickers. But besides the efforts at interdicting labs or traffickers or eradicating the production of poppies in the fields, the government also, with the support of the international community, needs to develop alternative livelihood for the poor farmers who are growing poppies because it's more lucrative than some alternative crops. As I said before, what's happening here in terms of the money that is generated, that it goes to extremists and terrorists and the undermining of the government, the government of Afghanistan, in cooperation with us, needs to become more focused on this issue. We're considering how we can be more helpful on the, with regard to this problem. This problem needs to be addressed if Afghanistan is to become the kind of place that the Afghan people and those of us who are here to help Afghanistan, if we are to achieve our goals.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rakesh. Ambassador, as everybody knows, some of these warlords were American allies in the war to overthrow the Taliban. And the critics say that the United States has not been aggressive enough to pressure them to demilitarize and has, looked the other way as some of them have gotten into the drug trade.
Well, of course, some of the warlords or regional leaders were our allies in the war against terror and the Taliban. The alternative would have been to have a lot more American forces on the ground here. And what we decided, the matter of strategy, was to rely on Afghans to liberate their country from the Taliban and Al-Qaeda with American limited ground special forces and a lot of air power. But we recognized right from the beginning that for Afghanistan to work, we needed to build national institutions, a national army and a national police, and to demobilize and civilianize militia forces controlled by warlords. We have made progress on both these tracks. The national army is now some 13,500 strong. The national police is more than 20,000. The effort to civilianize militia forces is making progress. So far, 13,000 out of perhaps a total of 50 to 55,000 militia forces have been demobilized. We are working with the Afghan government and the international community here in Afghanistan. We have many countries involved in the effort to rebuild Afghanistan, and Japan is particularly being helpful on this civilianizing effort, that by the end of June of next year, there should be no militia forces. And with that, should be the end of warlordism and in Afghanistan. As we are on the right track, you know, if you think of this effort as a 10-mile journey, we are at mile 3 so far. So we're making progress. We're heading in the right direction. But, of course, we have a long way to go.
Let's take a call now from Pat, who's on the line with us from Philadelphia.
Assalamu alaikum, Safir Halizad. You've been very critical.
Alaikum salam.
Darmanana. You've been very critical of the Pakistan government, and I was wondering if you could talk about that for a second, and what you think might come out of Jamhoori's Karzai's Islamabad that's coming up. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Pat.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, I've said repeatedly that Afghanistan's success is Pakistan's success, and Pakistan's success is Afghanistan's success, that these two countries need each other, that both countries need to become democratic, extremists have to be combated, terrorism should have no sanctuary in either country. And we applaud the effort by President Musharraf in his effort against Al-Qaeda. Pakistanis have taken casualties in that struggle, and we grieve for those who have lost their lives in this noble struggle. What I have said is that the Taliban still use Pakistani territory and come across to kill Americans and kill Afghans, and we would like Pakistan to do what it can to contain and defeat that threat as well, and that we're willing to help them in this effort. But the Afghans also need to do more inside Afghanistan to protect the country against the infiltrations by the extremists from across the border. And certainly our forces also are playing a role there. But you know, these two countries have a lot in common. They need each other. And I hope that Pakistan will make further progress in the battle against Al-Qaeda, as well as the Taliban and the those who support Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, the extremist who has been operating along the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Here's an email question from Farzana. Please ask Ambassador Khalilzad to differentiate between bad Taliban and moderate Taliban. I want to know how he and President Karzai permit themselves to be champions of the so-called moderate Taliban.
Well, I don't know what he or she is referring to in terms of myself, at least speaking for myself, to be championing moderate Taliban. What I have said is that all wars must end at some point, and that one way that the war against the Taliban can end is that there has to be a process of accountability and reconciliation at the end of the day. Accountability with regard to those who have committed crimes against humanity and against the Afghan people and have supported Al-Qaeda and terrorists. and those who are members of the Taliban in the past who are willing to come back or to live in peace in Afghanistan if they are already here, accepting Afghanistan's enlightened constitution, the legitimacy of the new order, and willing to renounce terror and violence. This is clearly up to the Afghans ultimately, but we do not object to a process that they might pursue that would have a balance between accountability and reconciliation. The other countries that have had this sort of experience have gone through the same thing, and ultimately Afghanistan will have to have the same sort of process with its own unique characteristics in Afghanistan as well.
Let's take a call now. Sunita joins us from San Francisco. I hope I didn't mispronounce your name too badly.
No, you pronounced it exactly how it's spelled. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, my question to the ambassador is, ever since the fall of the Taliban, you know, the women seem to have been severely, you know, affected by the Taliban. And what changes are the women seeing today? And what programs are being installed for these changes?
Well, that is one of the most heartening developments that one sees in Afghanistan is the change in the status of women compared to the Taliban period. We can take so many things. I don't know where to start, but let me start with education. Under the Taliban, some 900,000 people went to schools and university. They were mostly like 80% or so men and boys. Now you have a situation in 2.5 years that you have 5 million plus Afghans going to school, and the number of girls and women is more than a third, close to 40%, and that is amazing progress. Look at with regard to laws, the women were worse than a second class citizen under the Taliban. They exercised gender apartheid, and now the new Afghan constitution says women are equal before the law. Under the Taliban, of course, women had very little to no public role. Now, in the registration that has taken place for election, we have four of the 9+ million of Afghans who have registered, almost 42%. Are women. Unbelievable. And even a woman is running for president, challenging President Karzai. You know, women are working back in offices, and there is a ministry of even women's affairs. I could go on and on. And of course, even here, there is a long way to go. Women's health is in pretty bad conditions because the health infrastructure of the country has been so much damaged by years of war and Taliban neglect. But one of the very good things that has happened in Afghanistan is the great changes that one has seen with regard to women. One other thing that occurs to me that I like to refer to, under the Taliban, the stadium, the sports stadium, was used to execute people, including women, for crimes of virtue, as they describe, so-called virtue. Now, girls use the stadium to, like girls in other places, to participate in sport activities. Afghan women have gone to participate in the International Olympics. So I could go on for a long time on this issue, since I care about it a lot. I think they're making progress, but again, there is a long way to go for them to be where they should and where they must.
Sunita, thank you very much for the call. Our guest is U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan, Zalmay Khalilzad. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's take a call now with Bernard, who's with us from Spring City in Pennsylvania.
Hi, I'm thinking that democracy can't survive under primitive economic conditions, particularly in the Muslim world.
Ambassador, is that a fair question?
Well, I think in order for Afghanistan to become a democratic country, to become a true democracy, it has a long way to go. What I would like to characterize what's happening here is a process to build representative government, and a democratization process is underway. For Afghanistan to become a truly successful democracy, it certainly will need not only elections, but also the other institutions of democracy. It will need to have civil society much more stronger than it does now. It has to have a free press. Its press is relatively free, but it needs to have a stronger press. There has to be opposition parties that act within the law. Of course, you have to have the overall rule of law. But besides that, they will need to have security, and that means collecting weapons, civilianizing militia forces. I've talked already about national military, national police, fair laws fairly applied. And you also need people to be able to lead economically improving and good lives. And what we have on the economic track, we're working very hard to build the infrastructure of the economy. We have started with roads. We're also working with the Afghan government to have the laws of the country that can encourage private investment and private enterprise. Afghanistan has resources that natural resources that need to be developed. But for it to prosper, ultimately, conditions have to be created so that the Afghan private sector and international private sector has to come here. Afghanistan is making progress on this account as well. The country is now open for business, and I hope that if there are businessmen listening to this program in the United States, that they will consider investing in Afghanistan. There are opportunities to make money here, and at the same time, in helping Afghanistan and making money, they can help the national security of the United States.
Ambassador Khalilzad, thank you so much for being with us. Again, we know it's late there in Kabul. We appreciate your taking the time to speak with us and answer our questions today.
Well, thank you very much, Neil. It's good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, sir. Zalmay Khalilzad is the U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan. He joined us from his office in Kabul. When we come back from a short break, baseball's Edgar Martinez announced his retirement this week. So how do we judge designated hitters? We'll be taking your calls on that issue. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.